Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Academy Award winner Matt Damon. Academy Award nominee Greg Kinnear. Academy Award winner Cher. Four-time Academy Award watchers, the Farrelly Brothers, bring you a story of two brothers who are one of a kind.
All right.
And welcome to the Sun Cinema Podcast, a weekly radio show that examines the highs and lows of the medium of film through the filtered lens of Washington, D.C.'s only privately owned art house cinema. I'm your host, Jason Cauley, and I'm joined, as always, by my co-hosts and the proprietors of Sun Cinema, David Cabrera and Ryan Hunter Mitchell. Gentlemen.
Have any of you guys seen Stuck on You? Did anyone see
it? Oh, yeah. No, I've seen it.
With Matt Damon and Greg Kinnear, they're stuck together?
Yeah. They're conjoined twins.
I think I have seen
Siamese twins, as the movie says.
Yeah. And we're not Siamese. Jesus.
We're American.
We're American.
Wow.
Yeah. Rules
should be
the baby's crying in the background. If you can hear it, that's indicative of about most of what we're going to talk about today.
We're here to cry. We group therapy got canceled yesterday, so we're going to do it on the air.
Right.
So now Oscar winner Peter Farrelly, from director of Stuck on You and Dumb and Dumber.
Two things you're going to have to hear for the rest of your life is Peter Farrelly, Oscar winner, and Oscar winner Rami Malek.
Love it. What do you guys watch this weekend, other than the Oscars, for those who did?
Watch Green Book 3 times.
Cool. Very cool.
I watched a clip called White Savior that maybe we'll play. That's making fun of Green Book. Watched...
What did we play
Black,
at Suns?
I watched Black Klansman.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you did?
Finally.
Yeah.
I loved it.
You did? You? Yeah.
Yeah. I understand fun. The critiques of it.
Sure.
From a filmmaking, or like, you know, does it fit a detective narrative appropriately? Blah blah. I just can imagine Spike Lee being like, you know what, we're gonna make this movie and fuck you, and that's kind of
sure,
which is his thing. So
yeah, I mean, he made a movie like my parents would think is cool.
That's, I think, the point of it.
Yeah. No, but I mean that, like, probably part of his intention is like, how do I reach some normies with something kind of thought provoking?
Yeah,
totally.
And just the idea of him owning the narrative on that, you know, like, I'm going to make a film, a mainstream film that like trolls the KKK, etc. Like, that's.
Yeah, that's cool.
It doesn't go far enough, probably. And I know that there's a lot of. Anyways,
I go back and forth with the glorifying just surveillance on activist groups. It acts like, oh, this is all cool. Like, hey, we're cool. Yeah, no, I'm just a friend cop who like thinks Black Power is cool. It's like, no, you're there to like take down Stokely Carmichael or whatever. But I understand why he probably chose to not do that, because he's like, well, here, I can insert this one main character who brings that perspective.
But also, I mean, yeah, it's hard for me to imagine Spike Lee being, I mean, I imagine he has nuanced feelings, but him being pro-surveillance. But what I will say is, like, I think the scene that made me really think, oh, this is great, is the scene where it's him giving that long speech, where it's...
Yeah, that is cool.
And it's just like, you know, I'm going to put this long-ass scene in here, this guy giving this speech, and put it in a mainstream movie. And like,
Yeah, I see the benefits of it.
Yeah,
so. But, like, in real life, they were, like, investigating that more than they were investigating the KKK. It's like, I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had some issues with it. There are some brilliant moments in it just from, like, a great director's standpoint. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, taking away the politics of it or whatever. Just, like, the dance sequence when they go back to the... Like, it's so
incredible.
Fucking beautiful. Like, well put together, well shot, well edited.
Yeah.
I mean, just... well done. And you know, some of the lighting choices around the faces when Stokely Carmichael character is speaking, and they cut to the crowd shots, and it's like those, you know, spotlight kind of shots on the faces. Mm-hmm. It's so well done.
Yeah. And I like that parallel scene of, which I know you said is kind of cheesy, when they're showing the KKK dinner or ceremony and paralleling it with the scene that
Harry Belafonte
is in. Yeah. Like, I actually thought that was like, okay, this is one of the cool, this is a cool Spike Lee scene. You're doing these slow track shots across faces and paralleling them. Like, that was cool. But yeah, I mean, I wish you would have taken.
Also, there's that scene. I don't remember when it is. I think it's Duke that's like, at some point he's like, what we need to do is make America great again. And it's like, oh my God, Spike.
Yeah.
We got it. I mean, he didn't need to say it.
But that's why he wanted, I think that's why he wanted to make the movie, though, so he could do that stuff.
And to your point, I think, right, for like middle America and older, like he really wanted to make it clear,
mm-hmm,
what, you know, what he's connecting this to.
Yeah, it's a love or hate thing, I feel like, for people, too.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it, though. It was,
yeah,
it was fun.
I thought it was great.
I watched Shoplifters last night. You guys should all watch that.
Yeah.
It's very, very good.
That and Happy as Lazaro, I need to see.
Yes.
Well, I watched Personal Shopper with Kristen Stewart the other day. That one was not, I didn't like it.
Less.
And then I watched Witchfinder General with,
Vincent Price.
Vincent Price. Based on a Edgar Allan Poe story. Not very good. Pretty bad.
But yeah, well, we talked about that. Like, I've never seen an Edgar, and maybe I'm missing something in my memory, but I don't think I am. I've never seen an adaptation of an Edgar Allan Poe short story that was better than the short story. You know what I mean? Like, some of that stuff can, you can do that all day, and it works. Something about Edgar Allan Poe stuff just comes off the page in his own words better than you can show it in on screen.
Sure.
In, at least my experience watching all of that stuff, that's been my experience.
But what about Tim Burton?
Yeah, he could probably nail an Edgar Allan Poe.
But he hasn't done one.
The Raven with Johnny Depp.
Johnny Depp actually plays the Raven.
Yeah.
Right.
Obviously. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is going to win something soon.
Yeah.
I also watched this movie, Sankofa.
Oh, yeah. How was it?
It was amazing. It's a movie by Haile Gerima, who is a director who was also a professor at Howard University and started Sankofa Bookstore up on Howard U. Sankofa, right, is the idea of like revisiting your past to learn from it. And it's about a woman who sort of learns about her slave past. And came from a very unique perspective. It was a very like,
oh right, I have heard of this. It's like it's kind of fanciful or whatever, and just kind of delves into this whole idea.
It's not fun, but yeah.
Okay, yeah.
It was a very well made film, and one of the first films to like show slavery from the perspective of those who were rebelling against it, which was unique.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
No white savior, huh?
It was not Green Book.
It was not.
I finished watching that and then saw that Green Book.
Has anybody seen Cold War, by the way?
The Polish film? No. Yeah. I mean, that's like,
great.
Yeah, yeah, I've watched some extended clips of it. It looks, I mean, in the vein of like Roma, where you're just like, oh, the shot sequences and the way they've set up these shots are insane. It looks so well done.
Still need to see Roma on the big screen.
Oh, man. I think that
probably.
We happen to have a big screen.
Oh.
And Netflix.
Oh, it's still playing at Landmark, too. Wow, look at that.
Yeah, is it still at E Street?
Yeah.
Okay.
Jeez. When do you... Yeah, that'd be awesome if you guys get it.
Well, okay, this is kind of interesting about Roma. So AMC, I think, is... I just kind of read this in an article.
Right.
AMC, I think, isn't playing any Netflix movies.
Won't play them. Yeah.
Yeah, they just like won't play... Like, not only not right now.
Jeez.
Like, I think they've purposely not played Roma or anything else. Which I guess brings us to the Oscars. Let's talk about it. Are you guys ready to talk Oscars?
Sounds like the same quality decision making involved in.
Yeah.
They were awesome this year. Let's kick it off with some presenters, Mike Myers and Dana Carvey. Should we play that with them? Well, I was going to play the beginning part of it, but.
Does this count as an Academy Award for Wayne's World?
Let's be honest. The only reason we care about Bohemian Rhapsody is because of Wayne's World.
I certainly did not know.
Queen who?
Yeah.
Okay, let's propose this. Truly, if Wayne's World didn't make that the opening of that movie, do you think Bohemian Rhapsody even would have been made?
That's in real life. That's a real question.
That's a very real question.
I mean, it did. I mean, I was a teenager when that came out, and that
of course it was huge, right?
Yeah, I mean, but that's what I'm saying. Like, it kind of relaunched Queen for a whole new generation of people.
I think so.
To listen to Queen.
You're absolutely right. I don't think this film gets made without Wayne's World.
It would have been called We Are the Champions if it wasn't for Wayne's World.
Right. Yeah.
And no one's giving an award to a film that's called We Are the Champions.
So we should show Wayne's World soon. We should show
the
other Crash.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The actual good Crash. Anyways.
Yeah, so Bohemian Rhapsody. So going into this, I hated that it won anything for the Golden Globes. Especially not as musical or comedy.
Right. There's a... Rami Malek, Oscar winner, Rami Malek. You're going to say it for the rest of your life.
You have to.
Campaigned heavily, you know, for this award. And took it very, very seriously, as you can see in all of his speeches. And as supposedly, I mean, if you read anything at all, like is genuinely a decent person, according to all accounts, like is a nice guy and people liked him. And that's part of the reason the voting kind of carried him through.
He's not Mickey Rourke.
He's not a jackass, according to, you know, most of the things I've read. But he lip synced.
Which is why he's annoying.
Yeah. Like, but come on.
Yeah, not much interesting. Yeah, I mean, like, there's all kinds of issues with this winning, you know. I predicted it would win 3 Academy Awards. It won 4. And I predicted that he would win Best Actor just based on kind of how things were going. It wasn't a big surprise. But, yeah, I mean, you're talking about a performance that's lip-synced. And for me, maybe I'm wrong, but I've had this conversation with everybody. Like, he does not have the gravitas of the real person he's playing, Freddie Mercury. Freddie Mercury comes on stage and your eyes are glued to Freddie Mercury and what he's going to do, you know, for the remainder of the time he's on stage. And Rami Malek just, to me, didn't carry that kind of gravitas at all.
Yeah, I agree.
And it on top of being a 2-hour and 20-minute, very straightforward biopic that a lot of people had, you know, tons of kind of storyline issues with. Like, did they really break up? Like, there's a whole kind of second act where they're broken up, and people were saying, like, no, they never actually broke up. Like, Freddie Mercury did make a couple of solo albums, but they didn't break up the band. They just did that for dramatic effect to have some story to tell off of it. And it's a pretty dramatic shift if it didn't really happen in real life. That's kind of taking a huge liberty with that. And the Oscars came in opening with, you know, the remaining members of Queen on stage. You know, that's the opener. And
that's so cool.
The commercials were using Queen. Like, everybody jumped on this bandwagon of like, oh, yeah, no, we're all pro-Queen and Queen's the greatest. And it was just really inundated with Queen right out of the gate. And for what I thought was one of the worst movies I saw all year.
You know, I thought about watching this and Green Book just so I could have more of a right to say they sucked. But I don't need to. I get it.
Yeah.
It looks fine. But I can't help but think, like, yeah, we really like Queen. It's moving music. The Live Aid performance is near spiritual.
Yeah, legendary.
Of course. Like, so.
But I'd rather go on YouTube and watch the Freddie Mercury version of Live Aid performance.
And I saw that
which
editing.
I have also seen. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, good. Didn't they submit? They submitted like a side by side.
Right. Editing. That's what they were promoting, according to all the players and on the LA side when they were reaching out to the voting members on the editing side of the house. They were sending like, look what we did. We shot this.
The Live Aid version's so much cooler.
Right.
And they won.
Yeah. They won best editing. They also won best sound editing and sound mixing.
That was the craziest part to me. The editing and the sound mixing. I mean,
right?
How?
It's. Did everyone see that table scene where like they're about to get signed? Like, and doesn't everything just like happen? Like they just have a meeting with someone. They're like, oh, you guys are signed.
Right, right.
But it show it. It must cut 50 times in a minute, real quick.
No, it's
yeah. Let's play it and do a sound effect. Every time.
I mean, I'll try. That's going to be hard. Let's see. I'll play that.
See how fast your fingers are.
Yeah, okay. And
I've got to make an impression, darling.
You look like an angry lizard. It's your best work. Very subtle. Can fly away.
These are all
Can
cuts.
I borrow it for Sunday church? So this is Queen, and you must be Freddie Mercury.
Those are all cuts.
You've got to guess.
Yes.
Yep. We'll have. I'm not exaggerating.
Tell me, what makes Queen any different
Very accurate.
From all the other wannabe rock stars I meet?
I have to stop.
That's a long and Littlefinger, isn't that?
That was 21 cuts.
With four misfits who don't belong.
In 40 seconds.
More than. Quicker than. Right the felt like they were 2 seconds.
Pretty sure they don't belong either.
Well, we got all these cameras, guys. Let's just.
Gotta use them.
Yeah.
It looks like a reality show or something.
It's so basic.
Did it win best sound editing for the lip syncing? It was like, wow, they really made it
Perfect
look like
the studio scenes. You know, it shows them in a studio around a mixing board and like moving things up and down and a lot of dials.
Oh, right. They got confused and thought it was sound mixing happening in real time.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I see.
Then there's the whole thing about it sort of there was like a trending thing about bi erasure, right? About how like it didn't accurately portray that he was bi, and so
right, yeah, he caught a lot of flack for that. Apparently, saying I played a gay man, and they were like, he's actually bisexual.
Yeah, which like just kind of feels like another like Hollywood like, look, we're doing a cool thing, right? You know, like,
oh,
and then,
no,
like,
totally,
just totally getting it wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think they think that they're pulling this off. I mean, they did. They won a
No, they totally pulled it off because they played it as if he sang a lot of that. And, I mean, if anybody listens to Freddie Mercury for 10 seconds, like, walk up to a stranger on the street, you know that voice doesn't get replicated that easily, you know? And so they, what the producers said, the mystique surrounding this, apparently there's a couple things. One, I don't know this gentleman's name, but there was a Canadian artist who actually sang a lot of the bits and pieces where they were using it kind of
Bryan Adams
outside of the standard recording, you know, stuff that you could easily lip sync over. So this guy gets no credit. Like, he's been completely like shoved off to the side, like nothing. And then they said, this is where it gets interesting, and they won't go into detail about this because they pulled it off, but they said, Rami Malek actually recorded everything that you see him recording, and we did a mix of Rami Malek's voice with Freddie Mercury.
What?
Fucking kill me.
And everybody with a brain was like, oh, you mean like 99.9% Freddie Mercury and 0.01% Rami Malek, or what are you saying?
Why?
And they wouldn't explain anything. You know, I mean, it's just like,
what a waste.
Yeah, and
it's really disappointing.
I'm really upset that they're erasing people who actually have good stage presence and don't fall off the stage. Like, next time you make a movie about a stage master, you shouldn't have someone who falls off the stage.
Yeah, it requires actual, like, yeah, did you guys know that he fell off the stage with his Oscar and dropped his Oscar? And they had to, like, call the paramedics down while they were at commercial break to treat him and almost took him to the hospital. Video? There's a still, there was a still photo.
Wait, that's true?
Of him. Apparently, yeah, yeah, no, he fell off the stage.
No way.
Freddie Mercury.
Yes.
Oh.
So.
You know, they should have just given Andre 3000 the Oscar for the Jimi Hendrix film.
Right.
They were going to go in this direction. I don't understand.
You know, I haven't seen that either, but I just imagine it's better than this. Who cares?
Jack, he was fine. I don't know. I can't believe it. It doesn't make any sense. Sound thing is really what got me.
Yeah.
Yeah, it kind of got me too. I mean, if you look at the nominees for sound editing, I mean, it was Black Panther, First Man, which is stellar, A Quiet Place, and Roma. Like, these are like movies that
and
got
Roma,
this as
Roma
right.
Won, right.
Well, or even A Quiet Place. I mean, it is a movie about sound, and they did an incredible job about it. Take what you will, quality of the movie or whatever, but like sound editing, it was pretty stellar.
Good, but for my money, Roma was one of the best.
Oh no, without I agree completely.
Right from the opening drain.
Yep,
everything.
Yeah, and sound mixing too. I mean, you kind of have some of the same players. It's Black Panther, First Man, Roma, and A Star Is Born for sound mixing versus Bohemian Rhapsody, which won.
Also a Bryan Singer movie.
Yeah, I was going to say, I don't want to drag this
how the hell is Bryan
Singer?
Nobody addressed this at any point in time, and we're kind of, I mean, I hold the press accountable a little bit.
They were applauding this.
Because no one called them out on this. Like, hey, are you going to address the fact, and it could have been, take everything away that I've said about Rami Malek and all this and my own personal, you know, opinions on his performance. Sure. His speech, had he gone up there and said, hey, I just want to take a second to address, you know, this issue, given the film we made and the person we made this about, a bisexual man, he called him gay man, but correct that, get that right, call him a bisexual man and say, hey, look, you know, he wouldn't have had to been very specific, but he could have said something to the degree of, you know, we should be taking this very seriously, you know, in our, and we are taking this very seriously now in our industry. And I think that's a great thing. And people who, you know, are predatory towards anyone are not going to be tolerated. And we didn't tolerate it in this movie either.
And they're not,
and he would have gotten a standing ovation.
Yeah.
And I would have been like, you know what? Good for fucking Remy Ma.
Right on.
Yeah.
And he didn't
do it. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
You know?
Did they thank Brian?
No. But they acted like
just
he didn't
pretended
exist.
Pretended it had nothing to do
but
with
it. But Hollywood press was acting like this was like, hey, they really snubbed him. No one even mentioned him. And it's like, fuck, mention him. Yeah. How about mention him?
Bury his ass.
Yeah. Woof.
Yeah.
Whereas the last Oscars, it seemed like they were really trying to, you know, act like they were addressing the Me Too stuff, because I remember
Time's up.
And it almost seemed over, like maybe they're maybe they didn't want to overdo it this time, and so they just pretended like
no
problems existed.
No, because they think this shit is just they're all run by PR companies. It's all goddamn marketing right now. They're like, okay, now let's just have Green Book. That's their wokeness this year. Last year, they were trying to be woke in a long overdue conversation about treatment of women in film, underrepresentation, not getting speaking parts, not directing, not getting second funding on movies.
Crew parts.
There's so many important things there. Yeah. And it's not just a thing you're done with it. That was 2018.
Right. Now we're on to whatever we're on to.
Now we're on to Green Book. We're doing like...
Racism's back.
Yeah, we're doing like 1965 wokeness on...
That was the best line I read. We were talking about that earlier. Some critics said, Green Book? Oh, absolutely. Best picture, 1965.
Yep.
You guys didn't have this clip in your outline, but I kind of want to play it for you. I don't know if...
I think they
played this on Desus America. It's Mike Francesa, the New York sports radio legend, explaining why he loved Green Book. This is before the Oscars. And I think this pretty accurately sums up demographic of Oscar voter.
Yeah, awesome. Uncomfortable.
My skin's crawling. Go for it, Jack.
Here's the king of New York sports radio.
And it's a very, very touching movie. First of all, it's a movie that is really a love story between two guys who could not be more different, who basically, the way they were raised, made them be as different as night and day, or as black and white. And they traveled together and learned to accept each other, and then learned to love each other. And you have a guy who is Italian, who's from the streets, who's a lovable guy, you know, with a massive appetite, great family, great friends, people around him all night and day, and this loner of a black man who happens to be gay. Great family, great friends.
What the hell are you guys doing here?
We came over to keep Dolores company.
I don't know where this clip goes from here.
All right.
But that's it right there.
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I mean, there is definitely,
we live in a bubble. There's a lot of people that's a real contingency.
Let's drag Green Book through the mud. Everyone's doing this. We're not going to be the best at it, but we're going to give it a spanking. Teen Vogue had some good takes on it. You know, kind of pointing out the white savior, the unwokeness. But there was one take I particularly liked from Fortune magazine. And this is a kind of interesting look to pull away from the politics of it right away and, like, look at some inner politics. Okay. With Green Book winning, theater owners will breathe a sigh of relief. Netflix has posed an almost existential threat to the movie houses with widely seen films such as Bird Box and an artistic gem like Roma. Cinema chains like AMC Entertainment Holdings fought the online studio by refusing to show pictures it backed. With Green Book and Bohemian Rhapsody taking so many top prizes, Fox and Universal dominated the awards. Oof.
I will say, actually, that they didn't dominate. They had the same amount of wins apiece that Netflix had, actually. Netflix won four Academy Awards, so did Universal, and so did Fox. Which, you know, it's good for Netflix.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
But they did get some of the bigger awards,
though. Yeah. No,
typical Hollywood fashion. I mean, this is like an unaccepting the lack of ability to embrace something that's already happened. Mm-hmm. You know, this isn't like emerging new forms of media or something. Like, fucking Netflix is here.
Yeah.
It's been here for a long time, and they're now producing great films. And you're acting like you're shunning this newfangled thing that's like it's almost like
it's a fad.
It's a fad, exactly. Yeah. That's what I was looking for. Like, you're treating it like it's a fad and it's going to go away if we just ignore it, and it's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's laser discs.
Yeah,
but it also shows, like, you know, Jack, a few weeks ago you brought that up. You're like, well, why does the streaming platform matter? Like, when we're talking about Roma, like, why is that a big thing? And it's like, I really think it was. Netflix started buying billboards in LA a while back, like on Sunset. Like, these aren't really important places for it. It was a sign to Hollywood, like, hey, look, we're buying your billboard space for our movies. Which, this is all kind of funny and petty, but the Oscars are just becoming less and less relevant.
Right.
When they keep on taking this stance, or maybe they'll budge in the next year or two, or maybe they think they did by giving it a few awards this time.
Well, I mean, they tried to make this claim, you know, and this was kind of part of the whole Me Too movement and just kind of Oscars So White hashtag, where they came out and were like, oh my God, we're going to add all these new members to the Academy. It turned out they added about 1,300 people or so to the Academy. And it hasn't made a difference, really. You know, I mean, you're still, it's still an Academy heavily dominated by white guys 50 and older who love Green Book, you know, who love things like that, who love Bohemian Rhapsody because they grew up on Queen. You know, these are the people you're still trying to impress. It's not, if you gathered all of the Academy together in one room, you wouldn't walk in and see, you know, a sea of varying colors and ethnicities, sure, and, you know, men and women. It's mainly older white guys still.
Well, and they probably have a lot of ties to the industry. They've either been working in it for a long time, they've been part of studios, right?
For sure. And just to add another layer to this whole thing, the voting system. How does people are asking, like, oh my God, how does Green Book win over something like Roma or something like The Favorite? Well, it's kind of easy if you think about it, because unlike all the other awards that are just voted on straight and whoever has the most, you know, in that category wins. The Best Picture does not work like that. The Best Picture is ranked 1 through 8. So, and they believe this has happened, you know, more than once. Certainly a lot of people feel like, and this is a good example, that La La Land and Moonlight were kind of in the scenario where La La Land had huge supporters or it had huge detractors.
Uh-huh. You know, that's ridiculous. It's like an average.
It's to get to 51% is how this works. Oh. Yeah, but it works on a ranking system. And so what ends up happening is a lot of movies that are kind of in the 2 or 3 or 4 in the votes, even though they're far outnumbered by the one who gets the most number one votes, they're going to win because the way the system ranks those structure, because the one that's getting the most number one, right, yeah, yeah, is also the one getting a lot of number 7 or 8s because it, you know, like Roma,
it's going to have a stronger opinion.
That's clearly why Roma lost.
Yeah, Roma's going to get a ton of number one votes and it's going to get a ton of number 8 votes because there are people like, we just don't want a fucking Netflix movie to win.
For sure.
You know, or so people that are just bored by slow movies too.
So, yeah, or something that they actually have to read subtitles for. Yeah. You know?
Well, it's on Netflix.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, like, that's the little dirty backstory on Best Picture.
But it's funny because.
It is dirty.
Like, okay, if studios were doing great work and then these newcomers were coming and doing lazy stuff, or maybe they see the smaller budgets on some of the Netflix stuff and they're upset about this, but I don't think they recognize the limits of their own model. Making these huge movies that need to sell a ton of seats in a different world than the 70s,
right,
doesn't work. Like, Netflix is able to, like, be like, you know what? We don't need to pay. We cut a lot of the cost. We can make something on a smaller budget that's a little more focused or a little more personal or artistic, and it doesn't need to bring people in, pack the rows to make its money back. Right. They have a different model, and I think it allows them to take more chances, and I think that does create better stuff. And instead, the Academy's throwing all their chips in with the blandest, most moronic, sorry about Green Book or Bohemian Rhapsody. These are bland-ass movies. They're not even these greats or challenging movies by big directors. They're just boring ass movies that hopefully sell a bunch of tickets, like Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's exactly what's happening.
And Green Book's just, yeah, nonsense. They think they're woke because they.
The interesting thing too is Netflix. There's, if you type in like Roma Oscar budget, I don't know if you guys have been following this. There's a lot of, so the top 4 articles are: Netflix spent as much as $60 million on Roma Oscar campaign. Is Netflix $25 million plus Oscar campaign for Roma a game changer? Probably is the next line. Roma Oscar campaign over $20 million as Netflix wants Best Picture. And then Netflix spends double Alfonso Cuarón's Roma budget on Oscars.
Yeah, you know who started all of this, right? This all goes back to Harvey Weinstein. Harvey Weinstein and Miramax were the first guys to really go. I mean, their whole model on Miramax was based on, we're going to win Oscars, and that's how we're going to build our reputation as this, you know, come make movies with us because we're going to win.
Yeah.
We make prestige films. And they would spend, like on Shakespeare in Love, they would spend the budget over again on promoting it as an Oscar contender, you know, as an awards winner. So say the film cost $50 million, they spent another 50 just marketing it. And that became the model that everybody kind of started to have to go to because it was successful. They did it with The English Patient. They did it with Shakespeare in Love. They did it with those performances as well and the directors as well. I mean, like, you know.
And The Favorite with just $27 per Academy member.
Right. I mean, it just changes. It changed the entire game. I mean, a lot of people said that.
Are they that easy to buy?
Yeah, it's,
I'm sure.
Harvey Weinstein, like, this is not like people are talking like this happened. Like, he would go to the Hollywood retirement home and play screeners of Shakespeare in Love for the old people who still voted.
And
at
they
that
still
time.
Vote.
Yeah.
It sucks.
Yeah. No, I'm dead serious. And that's the kind of thing that happens. I mean, all of this stuff happens.
On the list of his crimes.
Rami Malek.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, Rami Malek was well you know, followed throughout the entire awards ceremony, like visiting Academy members and like, you know, just schmoozing basically for 3 or 4 months of just like getting his face out there and promoting the movie and and like walking a line, because there are rules about what you can, you know, invite people to, like voting Academy members can't go to something that's completely funded by the producer of a film, things like that. There's all these like weird things within the organizations and within the guilds themselves, okay, like what you can and can't get away with. But these people, like the marketing machine, like you were talking mm-hmm. about, like they know how to walk that line perfectly and get sure. asses in seats to see their movie, to get them in front of the actors and get them in front of the directors that they want to promote for the Academy Awards or the Golden Globes or whatever else. And it's effective. It works. I mean, there's a reason people do it, because Harvey Weinstein basically invented it, reinvented it, and it worked. And so now everybody does that. Well, so thanks for that too, Harvey Weinstein.
Fortune kind of leaves that stuff out. Like, they kind of point to it but gloss over it. But it's funny hearing that. Here's a line. It's very much beloved, and it's possibly a sign. This is on about Green Book. It's very much beloved, and it's possibly a sign there are some members of the Academy that aren't ready for a streaming service to win Best Picture, said Eric Davis, managing editor of Fandango. It's a film that a lot of people really enjoyed. It's like, yeah, that's not a Best Picture. Right. I'm sure a lot of people really enjoyed it. Like, what the hell?
Oh my gosh. Yeah, no, it's
you know, I think we're being too hard on it. I think a lot of people really enjoyed it.
Yeah. It kind of feels like the, like, you know, politics are screwed as long as there's money in politics. And
yeah,
same thing with movies.
Oh, Jack, will you play the Spike Lee clip that,
oh, yeah,
that
I sent you? Spike Lee.
Oh, yeah.
Spike Lee had an opinion on Green Book.
Was one of the several people thrilled that Green Book won.
Let's cut to Spike.
Oh, I bet. Every time somebody's driving somebody, I lose.
This is Spike in the press room.
They changed the seating arrangement.
We saw a little bit of a reaction to the Green Book win. Can you give us your thoughts on that Best Picture win?
He's drinking.
This is
Let great. Me take another sip. Next question. No, I thought it was courtside at the Garden. The ref made a bad call.
All right.
Oh, Spike.
Yeah.
You got to love when Spike is all goofy and unhinged.
He was feeling himself.
And he's at his best.
And he was being pretty polite there, I feel like. He could have.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, no.
Oh, yeah.
All things considered, yeah, he was still on pretty good behavior for Spike.
There is the other one more clip here from Spike. Oh, this one's quick.
All right.
The Brits?
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Is there something about Green Book that offends you? That's what I'm trying to get.
Offend? Are you British?
Yeah.
Are you British?
I am.
Well, let me give you a British answer. It was my cup of tea.
He runs around holding his Oscar, by the way.
Of course.
Oh,
Spike.
You know, yeah, he was one of, he tried to run out the theater or something. Like, he got up, tried to walk out when it won, and they like held, the ushers held him at the door. Right? No, you got to listen to the Peter Farrelly speech.
Yeah, and there's a nice clip of Chadwick Boseman you showed us.
Oh, yeah, there's like,
it's just a meme. Yeah.
Have you guys seen that?
His
Chadwick Boseman's face when Green Book wins.
Oh, he just no.
looks behind him like,
Yeah.
Like, yep. You know.
And they're going to give him that too.
Yeah. So. Oh, this is so great.
It's been quite a collection of best films in the in this decade.
I mean, Mahershala Ali. Cool. I'm glad he's won. One of the best. See the movie. I'm
he's
sure
one of the best actors
it.
Working on the planet for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not taking anything away from him at all. It's just.
And I even like Aragorn, but like, the movie looks like crap.
Yeah.
Can we do that White Savior clip?
Oh sure. Let's play Seth Meyers, friend of the pod.
That's like
Seth Meyers.
30-40 seconds of it.
This spring. See the story of the black woman who became a world-renowned scientist, an accomplished cellist, and activist, and a man who was white while she did it.
Her mic was too high, but I fixed it. 6 because of me.
You're doing great.
White savior.
Oh, man.
Yeah, that's enough.
That's great.
It goes on for like 6 minutes. The first couple
that's
of
a long. That's a long video. Yeah.
Let's just play the whole thing. All right, so that's us complaining about the Oscars. What were the snubs that didn't win anything or that didn't even get nods?
Well, I mean, you could talk about The Favorite, which was right.
Came in hot.
Kind of right
Coleman,
there with Roma. No, that was it. That's the one win.
Yeah.
It's a they big one.
10 nominations?
10 nominations, one win. So that was kind of...
Do we think Yorgos Lanthimos cares?
I hope not.
I hope not.
He's got that like Ingmar Bergman sort of reaction. Like,
yeah, I mean, he was there.
No, never mind.
Well, maybe he was there for Olivia.
And
he was up for 10.
Right. I mean, the movie gets 10 nominations. It's kind of like you got a show.
Yeah.
But yeah, it only had the one win.
I thought it. I mean, it was probably my favorite of the big theater movies from last year, but it was definitely too subtle. Like, the only press it got was like, oh, and it's about a lesbian love triangle in the court of Queen Anne. And I was like, all right, well, that's like, you're just jumping to the signifiers. It's a great movie that has like subtle looks, complex looks at interesting politics using sex and violence.
Power dynamics.
Yeah, power dynamics.
Yeah, but now that we've gone over the amount of marketing that folks do to, you know, get these awards, it makes me wonder, like, I'm sure they were like,
Greece is bankrupt.
Right.
We're not spending money.
Well, and a lot of people only point to the Olivia Colman, which I think was,
she paid a lot.
So happy that she won. But, you know, everybody kind of had Glenn Close as the front runner going in, and the outside of that is Glenn Close didn't win because nobody saw her movie.
Uh-huh.
You know, The Favorite was actually well-received. People saw it, and nobody saw Glenn Close's performance because it was just, you know, a very small movie that didn't get a lot of, didn't get a wide release, didn't get anything like that. And, yeah, fucking Olivia Colman's just great.
I watched Peep Show last night.
There's a snub I was happy with.
That's where she's...
The Mule, thank God we didn't have to see any of The Mule.
Eastwood, right?
Yeah.
Eastwood.
Oh. Glad we didn't have to see any of him.
Didn't like he and John Wayne like get flip out when Marlon Brando didn't accept his award for The Godfather?
Probably.
Like Eastwood talked some shit like right after. I forget the woman who accepted the award for him and called
Sasheen Littlefeather.
Yes. And she just called out, you know, the misrepresentation of Native Americans. And John Wayne had to be like restrained from jumping on stage. And Clint Eastwood came out right after and like, this is her.
Oh, that's awful. I didn't know that.
Shocker.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Mule, thankfully didn't get any.
Sorry to bother you, at least for script.
Yeah, sorry to bother you. It's probably the biggest snub for screenplay. Feel like that should have made it.
David brought up a good one.
Oh, yeah, Blindspotting.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely on my top five of last year.
Yeah. And in general, I feel like that movie was, you know, I guess we haven't talked about it since we showed it, but underrepresented movie. Like,
great.
Sorry to Bother You gets a lot of love for the many things that it addressed, but Blindspotting did a damn good job of addressing some of those same things and some other things very well.
Yeah.
Greg, who was on the show... Greg,
you're lying.
I'm lying. Friend of the podcast, our friend Greg, who was on
Greg Kramer.
Greg Kramer, who came on the show. We talked about like American genre film archive stuff.
Oh yeah,
he came to see Sorry to Bother You at Sons and loved that movie. And everyone was kind of comparing the two at the end. And he was like, honestly, like I loved Sorry to Bother You, but like this movie got me like in my feels way more than I, remotely. So,
I may have liked it a little more. Sorry to Bother You was so inventive and creative.
Yes.
And so
I think
that gets a...
I feel like that gets more of a snub from a creative standpoint.
Yeah.
And given the way that the Green Book won, it doesn't shock me that Blindspotting did.
Yeah.
Because Blindspotting actually addresses... It is a movie from, as you said, the 1965, you know.
Right.
Blindspotting is a movie that, you know, is more representative of today.
Of like a modern discourse on that. Yeah. And it definitely shows that you don't need to look at 1965 to look at very stressful situations that that happened to certain people that we marginalized.
Yeah, yeah.
Blindspotting was so good. It's funny. It's there's some great scenes in
there. Yeah, yeah. It was a very good mix of funny and then like, oh shit.
And it's nuanced. It makes you a little uncomfortable at times.
Totally.
It jumps around, like makes you at ease having a fun time, then makes you super stressed really quick.
Yeah.
What else got? Come on.
Oh, I think the Mr. Rogers documentary. I mean, like,
Won't You Be My Neighbor, like, also.
Yeah.
Did not get any you know.
Oh, Spider-Verse. Let's say Spider-Verse.
Spider-Verse, you know.
Spider-Verse 1, though.
Spider-Verse 1. Which, I'll be honest with you, I was fully expecting it to be some weird thing. I mean, they actually kind of went with the zeitgeist on that in the terms of voting. Like, I think you would have had an equal uproar had it not won in its
Cars
category.
4.
People loved it, you know, versus Incredibles 2 and some of the other things that were...
The Mr. Rogers one wasn't even nominated?
No, right?
Not even nominated.
Damn. No.
That's what I'm saying. That's slight.
I've heard Free Solo is awesome. You can watch it at Air and Space IMAX.
I think it's still playing at West End for those of people living in D.C.
Well, Air and Space is also in D.C.
Oh, yeah. No, of course.
It's a museum we have done.
Okay. Yeah.
We're in Washington, D.C.
Yeah, we're in D.C. We're a cinema. I don't know. What did you... We could play out an extended version of the Stuck on You trailer, or there's an old SNL clip with Frank Sinatra and Stevie Wonder doing Ebony and Ivory that I think is a great take on Green Book. I haven't watched this in years.
You are black and I am white.
Yeah, let's should we say farewell with the the clip from Green Book, the duet from Green Book?
All right.
I am dark and you are light.
You are blind as a bat then. I have sight. Side by side you are mine.
Perfect harmony.
We're talking salt and pepper. Whoa. Sandy and Dean. Stevie and me are peachy keen.
You are white.
You are black. And who cares? Who cares, baby?